You're listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. Hey there, and welcome to episode 30 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. That's right, episode 30. We've come a long way, and we couldn't have done it without you. And even though we've got 30 episodes under our belt, there's still plenty more topics to discover and talk about that pertain to you, the indie artist and the indie musician. For today's episode, you're going to hear an interview I did with Anne Roos. Anne wrote a book called The Musician's Guide to Brides, How to Make Money Playing Weddings. I've been wanting to have someone like Anne on the show for a while because so many of you listeners have requested that we cover topics that hit home more for the working musician, somebody out there who's playing corporate events or weddings or whatever. It's somebody who makes their living doing music, not somebody that's, you know, trying to be the pop icon or be the next big thing in their city, but someone who just wants to make money playing their instrument. So let's just jump right into my interview with Anne.
You really have to have everything in writing.
The most valuable thing that you have as a musician or an artist is what makes you different.
A really good engineer knows how to handle digital and not make it sound like digital.
You know, a lot of them would say, well, you should really just go with the label because you'll never get distribution, you'll never get this, you'll never get that. You know, we got all those things.
One of the challenges that everybody has is what I call the reality of the glut.
It's all a journey and a process, and it's not a press a button.
All right, well, joining me on the phone is Anne Roos. Anne recently wrote a book called The Musician's Guide to Brides. Anne, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you, Kevin?
Good. Well, the book is very thorough, and when you sent it to me, I was thinking, well, is there really a whole bunch of information that you need to know? And actually, there is. There's a
yeah,
lot of stuff
lot.
In there that I never had even thought of, not having been a wedding musician myself. But before we get into the details of the book, why don't you fill us in a little bit about yourself as an artist and what it is you do and for weddings specifically?
Well, I live in the Lake Tahoe area, which is a wedding destination area, one of the top areas that people travel to in the U.S. for weddings. And so that's predominantly what I do as a musician is gig at weddings. I also perform for other private events such as, business receptions and that kind of thing. And I should mention, too, that I am a harpist. I play the Celtic harp. And I'm usually a soloist, but I perform with other instrumentalists or vocalists when the need comes up. And I have a number of CDs available, and they're on CD Baby. And let's see, what else? I also teach lessons, so I'm a full-time musician, but I wouldn't say that I perform at weddings full-time necessarily.
Uh-huh. So what led up to you deciding to write this book?
Well, when I started performing at weddings, which was something like 25 years ago, and that was in Los Angeles, I had no clue. People just would ask me, hey, you play the harp, could you play at my cousin's wedding? And so I thought, oh, okay, fine. This sounds like some good extra money to pay for the harp and my lessons or what have you. And but I really had no idea of how to prepare for it and the etiquette and all of those other little things that come with performing at weddings. And in fact, my teacher at the time said, oh, just go there and do it and you'll do fine. And that was basically all she told me. So I wrote this book because I don't, first of all, I don't feel that a lot of people are prepared to perform at weddings and therefore they don't have good experiences doing it because it's not like performing at a bar gig or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wrote it because there's kind of a stereotype or seems to be a stereotype among some people that that when you hire a band for a wedding that they'll drink and they'll misbehave and that kind of thing. And I kind of want to work on another end and dispel that awful rumor.
Mm-hmm. Well, right off the bat, you highlight what you, in your opinion, state as being what it takes to play a wedding and kind of, you know, some character traits and things that are important as an artist. Can you expand on some of those here for us?
Oh, sure. So one of those traits would be to understand that you're really playing, you're not on stage and you're not the star of the show. And the bride is the star of the show. It's her big day. And in fact, anybody who's married understands that that's probably one of the biggest days in your life. And to understand that fact when you're performing at a wedding, that you're most of the time your background music, and to be okay with that. And that's one trait that really works, because otherwise then you behave like a diva instead. Mm-hmm. And being able to take directions from the bride or people who she appoints is really important, because, again, it's her day. And to educate her about what you do, because most of the time the bride or whoever's hiring you has never thrown a big party, so she doesn't know anything about what your needs are. So if she thinks that you can, that you're band can perform on a gravel driveway and you can't, you know, you need to dispel that kind of thing and kind of educate her about, well, we should be in the shade so our instruments stay in tune and things like that. Mm-hmm. And being able to I would call it being a people person, and being able to stand your ground when you need to and say no when you have to, but also to say yes as much as possible so that you're being accommodating. I think also just simply being able to play smoothly and with confidence, and you don't have to be a highly technical or even be famous to perform at weddings. Those things which do you well when you're performing concert gigs don't really, they're not that important, because again, you're providing a nice auditory atmosphere for the wedding.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know in the book you kind of go through the process of meeting with the bride and all that, but how do you on the front end put out any fires that could occur the day of the wedding? What are some approaches to handle that on the front end without showing up and finding out you're playing in the sun with, you know, your four-piece string quartet, and you know you think you're just playing the ceremony, and they're expecting you to play all day long for the reception, for all sorts of stuff. And what are some good approaches to make sure that doesn't happen?
Well, of course, you need to have a performance agreement or a contract. Although when I'm talking with a bride or people who are booking my services, I always call it a performance agreement, because I think it sounds nicer. Mm-hmm. It's just a little more more welcoming. But you really have to have everything in writing that you possibly can think needs to be said according to what you need. So if you need to be performing on a level surface, you need to say that, because otherwise the bride will think that she can put you in beach sand with no platform whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Or again, like this being in direct sunlight, which is terrible for most acoustic instruments for any length of time. Just all of it, mentioning in your performance agreement that these are what your needs are. And also prior to the event, if you have a concern that, well, certainly when you're initially talking with the bride, to get as much information about the performance area. Mm-hmm. So that you're not, so that there's no surprises. And that's why it's important to talk to the bride and not just simply to do everything by email, because there's going to be some really important little pieces of information that you mm-hmm. won't find out if she's just corresponding by email. But certainly right before the ceremony as well, when you talk with her about a week or two before, just to go over all of the details and confirm that everything is as you had talked about before, such as the guest numbers, so you know how much to amplify when you're setting up and that kind of thing. You can also reiterate concerns that you have, like, now there is an elevator, right? I don't have to go up three flights of stairs, you know, with a drum set. So things of that nature, if you're concerned about, you can always ask again right beforehand. So it's really about having a lot of communication.
Yeah, and I think you highlight it in pretty good detail in the book that for musicians that are used to playing at places like clubs, or just for people that are used to having musicians, a lot of the details are taken care of that we don't necessarily think about. But at a wedding, like you mentioned, this could be the first time someone's ever put on a party like this. And there's so many details that chances are they're not even going to think of. And if you don't bring to their attention, you know,
you're in trouble.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
You put it in your contract and there's nothing that's been said that you can't do that. Guess what? You're stuck and you have to do that. And so it's really important to be very clear about those kinds of things, because you can really be in a lot of trouble. They'll ask you to play in a treehouse or something. which I actually was asked, and I did actually decide to do that, but that was in Sacramento on a very hot, over 100 degree day.
Oh, wow.
And it was the only shade in the yard.
I'll take the treehouse.
They got my Celtic harp up in the treehouse. So I said, okay, fine. And I was in the shade and everybody else sat in the sun. That was my decision. I could have also just said, I'm not doing this.
So in the situation like that, where you kind of have to hold to some boundaries, how do you go about approaching that? Especially if it's happening on the big day, it's the wedding. The last thing the bride wants to worry about is whether or not the musician, you know, can sit in the shade or not. How do you handle that?
What happens, I think more often for me, the thing that brides have a big problem with is if they're having an outdoor wedding and the weather doesn't hold up to their expectations. So it's either threatening, you know, you hear thunder overhead, you're not going to set up outside.
Yeah.
And they have a vision of what they want their wedding to look like, and they get, you know, they may decide, no, I'm going to be outside whether you can do it or not. You know, and generally the answer is I'm not setting up outside. And they still, if you have your performance agreement hammered out correctly, they still owe you money regardless, because you've turned down other work to perform. So, but you just have to stand your ground and say, I can't do that. It's, you know, it's like a baker who's bringing the wedding cake. If you don't provide a table for him to put the cake down on, he can't deliver his cake. And I can't deliver music if you don't provide me with, you know, some shelter from rain or whatever's going on that day. Most of the time they understand this, and also sort of heading it off at the pass as well helps. But there are just some times that they just, once in a great while, you'll have all your conversations and communicate and figure everything's right, and you'll get there and she completely ignored you. And that's when it's difficult. It becomes really difficult. And you just sort of have to make an executive decision. Am I going to play it or not? If you have to stand your ground, you should. But, you know, the videographer is not going to put out his equipment in a thunderstorm either.
True. I mean, yeah, it's not like the musician's the only one that's affected by the elements or the...
And there's this teamwork that's involved at performing at a wedding. People can be really helpful. And if you're able to be helpful for somebody else, you know, and understanding, oh, maybe I should try and set up somewhere else because this is the best spot for the videographer to put his tripod, you know, to consider that and talk it over with them, and, you know, and these kinds of things. And then when stuff happens, people stand up for each other and help smooth things out with the bride. The minister can help smooth things out with the bride if something, you know, if the cake wasn't delivered on time, for instance, and she notices it's not there in the room, he can help smooth things out and make it easier for her to understand, well, maybe he's 10 minutes off his arrival time.
Yeah.
You know? So that's another thing that's, I think it's really cool about wedding gigs, is because you performing in the same area, you know, it's usually you perform in the same geographical region where you happen to live. You'll get to know the other wedding service providers. And so it's sort of a teamwork form. And it's very cool because they recommend your services and you get more gigs out of it.
What are some common mistakes that you see a lot of people who are trying to jump into playing at weddings and haven't really thought through the approach? You mentioned, obviously, that not having a performance agreement. Are there other common mistakes that you see people making?
Well, I think a lot of them, the common mistakes I see are more like behavioral types of things when they're at the wedding itself. And I think it all stems from not recognizing that this is somebody's really special day. And so they kind of think that the wedding is their party and that they can behave how they want to. And I interviewed 85 wedding coordinators, ministers and officiants and other wedding musicians, and asked what their pet peeves were about musicians. Mm-hmm. And so some of the stuff that they talked about is stuff that I've seen a lot. Like, for instance, one thing that other musicians don't like is that if there's a wedding ceremony musician and that person is performing in the same place as the wedding or within earshot of the wedding reception band, oftentimes the other band will just show up and start doing a sound check, regardless of the fact that the wedding is still going on and somebody else is still performing there.
Yeah.
Having an understanding that it's not like your day, and yeah, it's your gig, but again, you aren't the star of the show. You know, the bride is always, this is her day, and you are to do what she wants. And if she's having her ceremony, you should be understanding that you shouldn't be testing your sound while she's doing that. But some of the other things that came up, a lot of the coordinators, there were actually 20% of the coordinators I talked with don't even want to recommend wedding reception bands anymore, live musicians for receptions, because they've shown up intoxicated or they're off during breaks in the bathroom snorting or something.
Oh, man.
Which is just, I've never seen that, but I guess it's something that might occur at receptions. I'm primarily performing at ceremonies. You know, just because the guests drink and often to excess at a wedding doesn't mean you get to. You're on the job.
Yeah.
Also, people arriving late. A friend of mine who plays bagpipes said that showing up late with a good excuse does not equal being on time. And that's really the case at a wedding. You cannot be late. You cannot be late at all. You know, just ignoring the minister, ignoring what's going on in the ceremony is another thing that doesn't sit well. And obviously not dressing appropriately. I have actually seen bands put out tip jars at wedding receptions.
Oh my.
Which I think is like so rude. They're paying you all this money. So, you know, so there's really some etiquette things. And if you're not sure, talk to the wedding coordinator and ask, is it okay for me to put out my sign from my band?
Yeah.
You know, the
or even selling CDs is that sometimes, you know, definitely something you should ask ahead of time, like if you're a band that has CDs and...
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing to do, because then if it's okay, then it's fine and it's been cleared. But you're being paid a lot of money to perform at weddings.
Yeah.
I mean, more than you. For me, I make more at a wedding than at those other kinds of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
To be kind of putting your hand out and asking for more money by putting CDs out and doing a whole lot of promotion there kind of doesn't sit well with some people.
Yeah.
Understandably, because they've already paid out a lot of money for you. If you want to, it's fine to ask. Sometimes people come up to me and say, oh, I really want to buy one of your CDs. Then I'll say, well, you know, I'm taking a break, you know, in 15 minutes, and I can meet you outside. And you know, you're not overtly promoting yourself
yeah.
right there at the wedding. And that's okay. Or you just give them your card and say, contact me later.
Yeah.
Same thing if they have a sister or somebody else who's getting married and wants and ask you for what your prices are, they'll do that at the wedding. It's really a no-no to talk about your prices at the wedding, because it'll get back to the bride and she doesn't want everybody to know what she spent.
Yeah.
Just hand out your card. And then also, if a booking agent got you the gig, give them the booking agent's card instead, because that is the way to thank the booking agent, and it'll come back to you in more gigs.
So you mentioned money a couple times, and I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, how much money is there? And I'm just curious, is there any sort of price range that is typical? I know that in your book you mentioned that you should never, ever, ever print your rate sheet anywhere on any of your information. So, what's the money like in weddings?
Well, and I do want to say, with the exception, you can obviously, a booking agent or a wedding coordinator may ask for your fees, but she's not advertising them. And
yeah,
they're just
yeah.
asking because they're working with the bride's budget, but you're not advertising your fees, but you should never really advertise them. It's so dependent upon a bunch of factors, like how much experience do you have? You know, if you're just getting out there, if you're a soloist and, you know, if you play the guitar, you play classical guitar and you want to get out and start playing at weddings, you're just starting out. So you may not want to charge a lot. And then again, you're a soloist, and maybe it has to do as well with the economics of the area that you live in. Because some, some regions have a higher cost of living than others, things of that nature. So I have a hard time actually giving a range mm-hmm. because obviously if you're an 8-piece swing band, you're going to be charging something very different than a solo harpist. Right? Mm-hmm. So the best thing to do is to, and not to be afraid to do this, but to contact other musicians that are in your area and make friends with them. Find out, you know, what do you charge or even what range do you charge? But you can also ask booking agents, ask wedding coordinators. And by asking these people, you know, you're also going to build, you're going to build a relationship with these people, and they may later call upon you to perform. So it's good to just to talk with these people. But I couldn't even name a number for you because it's dependent on so many factors as to what you're finally going to decide to charge. And in the end, you just have to simply be happy with what you charge.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're uncomfortable and you feel that you're not charging the right amount of money, then you're not going to be able to spit it out very easily when you talk to a bride, and then she'll think she can negotiate with you. Mm-hmm. She can hear that in your voice.
Yeah.
So you'll really want to research this out and decide. You might want to charge an hourly fee, or maybe you want to put together several packages. So one's a ceremony package, and one is for playing just in cocktail hour, and one is for the entire reception, and I don't know, one, maybe you have another package where you're teaching people how to dance a certain step, or mm-hmm. I don't know. Being comfortable about what you charge also has to do with making sure that it's enough money so that you don't feel like you have to be given a tip.
Yeah, yeah.
Because wedding coordinators, when I asked about pet peeves, wedding coordinators mentioned to me that there's some musicians who'll stand around afterwards like they're waiting to be for their gratuity. And that's really not good. It really doesn't look good.
What kind of booking agents, if someone's wanting to get into playing at weddings and you know, they're like a solo instrumentalist, somebody who's not a band or, you know, that's just kind of learning some different material that would fit, be appropriate for a band to play at a wedding. But if it's a solo, like guitar player, and they're wanting to get hooked up into that, what kind of booking agent should they look for? Is it somebody who just solely focuses on weddings, or?
Well, I don't know of too many booking agents who just only, you know, focus on weddings. I think they're kind of, you know, they're the booking agents who work on behalf of the musician,
mm-hmm.
who are like, you know, I'm sure Sting has his very own booking agent and finds all of his gigs for him. And that's the way that works. But for a wedding, you have booking agents who are working on the client's behalf instead. So a bride, or even when it comes to a corporate gig, somebody from a large company will call a booking agent and say, you know, that they're having a wedding and they want to know, you know, they give them the details and what kind of instrumentation they want. And then the booking agent goes and looks for that kind of entertainment to fit the gig. And those are the kind of booking agents you want to look for. Mm-hmm. So they're not, you just want to get listed with them. And so you can find these booking agents often by just talking with banquet, with the people who are the banquet managers at, wedding facilities, you know, places that actually, rent out the rooms for the brides when they're having their wedding receptions.
Mm-hmm.
For wedding ceremonies, you can talk to wedding coordinators. A lot of wedding coordinators actually go through booking agents because if somebody asks them for, say, a mariachi band, they may not know of any in the area. And what are they going to do? They're going to pick up the phone and call a booking agent and say, can you find me a mariachi band? Mm-hmm. So they will have a certain list of booking agents they may have already contacted who've helped supply them with the music.
When you're planning out your performance at a wedding, what kind of repertoire should you have as a musician?
For the most part, it should be music that the bride's familiar with, or that people in general are familiar with. So cover bands generally can get booked pretty well at weddings because brides have favorite songs. But in general, there are certain They're songs that are kind of timeless that she'll want to hear. Even if you're a band that specializes in ethnic music, you should know the kinds of dances that are perhaps always done at a wedding. A Jewish wedding band, a klezmer band, should be able to play the hora, for instance. Mm-hmm. This is what they're going to want to have at their reception. You can contact officiants in your area, and they might be able to help you out. Or if you play in a church regularly, you may want to know what hymns are standard for the ceremony. If you're soloist, you can go about this easily enough yourself by going through your own repertoire and breaking it up into what would be good for music before the ceremony, and mm-hmm. then what would be good for during the ceremony and for seating and so on. If you're a band, you can look at what you've played, what would work, and what maybe you want to work on together to kind of supplement your music list. But there are also a lot of books out there that can help you. There's wedding fake books abound.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that would be a pretty good idea to discuss with the bride? I could see it coming up, especially in a band situation.
Yeah, if you're a band and you're preparing to do this, and if you're not played at weddings, then you'd certainly go about, bolstering up your repertoire that way. Once you've got a repertoire or you're starting to get gigs, you definitely need to talk to the bride and find out what she wants to have played. And many times that is a condition for whether she's going to hire you or not.
Yeah.
If her favorite song is Unchained Melody, she'll come right out and say, "Can you play Unchained Melody?" Before she's even booked you. You'll need to discuss with her specifically what she wants to have played for certain key elements of the ceremony and for the reception. So, certainly for reception musicians, the first dance is really important for them to know. The one thing you need to know does she want to walk down to Here Comes the Bride or not? What does she really want to walk down the aisle to? Because uh-huh. that's the most important song of the ceremony.
Yeah. What should someone who's really trying to make a decent living playing weddings, what should they have ready to go as far as like a press kit or a website, or what's the bare bones as far as that's concerned?
The absolute bare bones is having a business card mm-hmm. and getting on the phone, going through the good old fashioned yellow pages and getting in touch with banquet managers if you want to play at receptions, or getting in touch with wedding chapels and different wedding locations, getting in touch with booking agents, wedding coordinators, and getting your name out there. And then as you do that, you'll find out what they need. They will tell you what they need. They may want to have a demo from you. And it doesn't have to be done in a studio, and it doesn't have to be really fancy. You can have something that just basically has a smattering of songs that you would typically play at weddings or that's often requested. And that's a good thing to have. The very first thing you should have is a business card, and mm-hmm. get yourself and just start making phone calls. And then you'll discover what other things you need, and you can start building on it. A press kit would contain your repertoire, your rate sheet, and at the bottom just always include something like, "These fees are subject to change without notice. Please call for a quote," so they understand that they need to contact you regardless to make sure you're available and everything.
Yeah. The CD isn't important.
The CD is important, but the importance about it is not so much that it has to be like technically wow.
Uh-huh.
As long as you just let people know on the CD, on the demo, that this is a simple recording, it's not for broadcast purposes, then they understand they're listening to it for the music and not for technical cleanness.
Mm-hmm.
It should be short. You can have a lot of songs on there and just little 30-second samples of them. And at the beginning, mention your name and how to contact you. And at the end, do the same. Have that on the outside of the CD so that if the envelope gets lost that you gave it to them, they'll know whose it was. Or if you're just having a few songs on there, you can play them in the entirety and play music that a bride is most likely to request mm-hmm. in your demo. If you have a website, certainly put your demo on your website. You just put the entire demo there. Most people will listen to it that way. If you don't have a website, or if you're really short on money, there are, like free websites like MySpace and stuff, but that's not necessarily the best way to go. You're really best just getting your own website, your own domain name, and getting out there that way.
Mm-hmm. How many weddings do you typically play a year?
Right now, it tends to average about 150.
Wow.
It has been more, but the trend seems to be, at least for me, the trend seems to be that people are hiring me to play longer. They used to have me perform just for the ceremony, and then I was out the door. And mm-hmm. now the hours that I'm playing is probably about the same as it's been for a while.
So with all those weddings, you've got to have some horror stories to share with us of brides gone bad.
Yes. Yeah, but for the most part, weddings are not like that. And I would say maybe 2% of my weddings a year, so maybe 2 out of a year will be really horror stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them are just lovely and wonderful and absolutely blissful gigs to play. So, because most people don't want their weddings to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they just don't. So sometimes the stuff that's really horror stories are Mother Nature stuff that happens
mm-hmm.
that's just awful. Like, you know, the bride's veil gets, you know, catches on fire because she's standing too close to the candelabra. Or, you know, I mean, these are things that you have those things. And then there are the things that happen because people at the wedding ceremonies are completely inebriated. And when that happens, you know, you have the people who one wedding coordinator shared with me that the father of the bride was so drunk that she had to basically hold him up and walk him down the aisle.
Wow.
And then afterwards, when they went to the reception, he put a napkin down on the floor in front of the table where the wedding party was seated and laid down and took a nap. Sometimes stuff happens that because you weren't told about stuff, so you weren't prepared for mm-hmm. it. And then that's, you know, like once in a while, couples, like even at their weddings, like to pull practical jokes on each other. DJ shared with me that he was waiting and waiting and waiting to announce the bride and the groom into the room for the reception. They didn't. He was like, where are they? So he asked somebody, and the bride was whisked off right after the ceremony because her water broke.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that's the first I've heard about that.
Yeah.
So and apparently they never showed up to their reception and they just had a nice party there. So, you know, so there's things that happen like that. And sometimes it's really awful things. For me, I would say that the worst stuff for me it has to do with Mother Nature. I'm really allergic to mosquitoes and biting flies and that kind of thing. Once in a very great while, I'm at a wedding and I'm stung and stung really badly. And then I barely make it through and it makes it really difficult for me. And sometimes I don't. There were two times that I actually, after I was hired to play for the ceremony reception and I got the bride down and back up the aisle. And then I said, you showed them my welts and said, if you don't let me leave now, I'm going to have to go to the hospital. And off I went. And that wasn't really good. You know, it's not a thing that I like or I'm proud of, but it's...
What can you do?
What can I do? You know, and so I think expect the unexpected and come prepared with a lot of extra stuff. Come prepared for the Noah's Ark rule, which is you should always bring a spare something with you, a spare cords, spare, even if you have small amps, an extra spare small amp, because anything that can go wrong will. You may think that your amp's working fine and you show up at that wedding and it's not and you've got 200 people there and you're in trouble. So there are things like that that it's really good if you can take two of everything. You know, except for I can't bring two harps, but, you know, whatever you can do, bring extra strings, bring extra everything, plan for things to possibly go wrong, and then you're okay. So for me, when I've always got the extra DEET and antihistamine in the car in case the mosquitoes are biting.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, and it'll vary for everybody what they may want to bring in case of emergency. As you do weddings and you do these gigs, you'll start realizing I need to remember to bring that thing, and then you're okay. I would think some of the most important things to bring, the most important things to bring are a cell phone because, and of course, turn it off or leave it in your car during the ceremony, but bring it because if you can't find where the ceremony is or, you know, can't find the wedding coordinator when you arrive or something, they're usually available by cell phone there. And also, I'm a firm believer in that hand sanitizer stuff. Because you can wash your hands with it, and people at weddings, they're got junk all over their hands from the finger foods, and they're coughing and sneezing into their hands, and they're going to shake your hand over and over and over again. And it's a really good thing to have with you. I have a beach umbrella that I bring when I know that there's no shade at a location. You know, one of those market type of umbrellas that you can just pop up. All that kind of stuff. You just learn as you do this what you may need.
Well, I know we've just scratched the surface of what you cover in your book, but why don't you let everybody know where they can find the book and how they can get it?
Oh, sure. And, you know, I also wanted to mention something, too, just sort of in closing, that, you know, there are musicians out there, and you've never heard of them at all. And because they're not famous in any way, and they make their living, or they make a lot of, you know, they make a good amount of money performing at weddings. And the reasons for this is because they're absolutely fantastic gigs to play at. Everybody's happy, and they're all in a celebratory mood. And you're playing for a really special, special time in somebody's life. And when you come to realize that, these are just really cool gigs. So I wanted to mention that and encourage people, because I know, again, with all the media about how wacky weddings can be and the strange movies that come out about, you know, like The Wedding Singer and stuff like that, that kind of make weddings look like cheesy things to perform at. You know, not really. They're really cool gigs. So...
Well, that's going to bring us to the end of another episode, but before I close out, I wanted to mention that Anne's book is available at Amazon.com and any other retail site that carries Hal Leonard books. So you can find out more information about the book at Hal Leonard's website or at Amazon.com, and we'll put some links on our podcast webpage, which is cdbabypodcast.com. And I also wanted to mention that we have our listener feedback line that is open and ready to take your message. And you guys have been leaving some great messages. And the number is 206-426-5683. Once again, that is 206-426-5683. And we didn't do a roundtable episode in between the last episode with Ariel and this one. We're going to do one next time and cover both episodes and get to your comments and phone calls. I would like to hear some stories about online promotion. Since we talked to Ariel, it'd be great to hear about some promotion things that you've been doing that's working, maybe social networking tricks you may have learned, but anything along those lines. I'd like to hear some focus in on that, and we're always accepting mistake stories, and of course, you know, success stories are great as well to get us over the hump after listening to some sad stories. But yeah, so feel free to call that and leave us a message. Also, since we just talked to Anne, I'd like to hear from anyone who's having success playing weddings or corporate events. If you have any tips that we didn't cover on the podcast, it'd be great to hear that as well. And I should also mention that you're always welcome to email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. And we've been getting a lot of new listeners lately. Don't forget, you can go back and listen to all the old episodes starting at episode 1 and hear our humble beginnings as a podcast. And if you're using iTunes, we'd really appreciate it if you log into iTunes and leave some feedback about the show. That'll help us out a lot. And I think that's everything. We'll catch you next time. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.